something, that we have to go somewhere, and that we have to get something in order to be happy. And so someone who's in that consciousness, they've forgotten their Brahman nature. But he says here that that's just the beginning, really. Although it's the easiest perceived realization, it's the beginning, and then there are higher realizations after that, which only you hear Vaishnavas talking about. You only get this information in the Vaishnava traditions, right? The four disciplic succession coming from the Vedas. It's interesting, all the acharyas have come from South India. Even Shankara is from South India. So most of the schools of yoga, most of the, and the Buddhists, they're all talking about this first realization, the Brahman realization, but maybe Christians to a certain degree may talk about Paramatma. But practically no one else is speaking about Bhagavan realization or Paramatma realization. And it's not so easy. But this is spoken of in the first canto of the Bhagavatam. There's one verse that describes these. In the second chapter, there's a verse that describes these different realizations of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, and how they're one and the same but different. So, you know the verse, Diane? Do you know? Have you read the Bhagavatam at all?
The Bhagavad Gita, yeah.
The Bhagavad Gita. How about this? That's it. Do we have sloka books here? No. So it's in the. Let's look at. I think it's 1-2-6. In the Bhagavatam, so that would be. It's one of my favorite verses. I just wrote about this yesterday for the Japanese. Srila Prabhupada letters. One to 11? Yeah, Vedanti tat tat vavidas tatvam yajganam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti sabjate. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Did you find it there, Jonathan?
Page number 161.
At the bottom, right bottom. Well, this is because of this verse, of course, and others, but this is. Philosophically speaking, this is one of the main reasons why I like practicing Krishna consciousness. This philosophical point, I consider it the most broad and comprehensive philosophical concept that it's very, very rare to find anywhere else. Because we often hear that we're God, you're it. From a Brahman point of view, there's no difference between me and you, or us. Even from a material point of view, there's no difference, right? We all have the same amount of earth, water, air, fire in our bodies, and we can even exchange blood. You know, we breathe the same air, we're using the same water, we're made of the same molecules, and the molecules are all the same as well. And if you break down the molecule into its smallest component, all the components are the same. You know, you get into quantum mechanics where it becomes a string theory, where they don't find any material substance even, just vibrations of light. And so this is what's making up the material energy. And it's all one energy. So there's the only difference we see between each other is in our mind, really. You know, it's just concepts we have that we're different. But from a physical point of view, we're all the same. From a spiritual point of view, it's pointing out here that we're also all the same. We're all made of this Brahman energy. And so it's very popular to hear that I'm God, you're God, we're all the same. And that's true to a certain degree, but then again, I don't know what's going on in your body, and you don't know what's going on in my body. And although we're a Brahmana nature, we're under some influence of another energy that causes us to forget this. So if we're God, then how have we forgotten that we're God? What's causing us to forget that? And in this question is really not answered very well by other philosophies. But in this verse, when we understand that although it's one substance, there's one source. Even though this all the substance is the same, there's one source to that substance. There's the quantitative source. And from that, then this question can be answered, that ultimately the source is coming from Bhagavan. So there's a verse in the Upanishads, Nityo nityananam chaitanas chaitananam eko bahunam yo vidadati kaman. It says that there's many eternals, and there's one eternal. There's one eternal and many eternals. You know, God's eternal, you're eternal, I'm eternal, and there's one source of consciousness, and there's many little conscious entities. You're conscious, I'm conscious, God's conscious. So he's eternal, we're eternal. He's conscious, we're conscious. The difference is that he's the source, and he's the maintainer of all the other eternals and of all the other consciousnesses. So we're dependent on the Lord. We're dependent on Bhagavan, just like a sun ray is dependent upon the sun. So this verse describes these differences. Although it's one substance, there's the Paramatma aspect, and there's also the Bhagavan, the source, that's also there.
Can I ask
a
question?
Yeah.
Okay, a question on the verse. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. What does that mean, non-dual substance?
It's all one. It's all one energy, but at the same time, it manifests as varieties. So it's true in the spiritual energy. It's also true of the material energy. Even the material energy is one substance that ultimately is Brahman. But it can, by God's arrangement, it can manifest varieties. And therefore there can be so many different types of experiences, even though it's one energy. So simultaneously one and different, achanta, beda, beda, tattva. Simultaneously one and different. So to me, this is the complete, most comprehensive explanation of reality that I've ever encountered, that includes, you know, both personal and impersonal, not just one, not just the other, but both. So let's continue on here, and then Prabhupada's quoting again from Bhagavad Gita 7:7, where Krishna says that everything depends on him, just like pearls are dependent, that are strung on a thread, or they're depending on that thread in order for them to be able to stay in that form of a necklace. That thread has to be there. Otherwise they would all scatter and fall apart. And then he's quoting from Bhagavad Gita 10:42, where Krishna further explains, Ata va bahu naitena kim gyatena tavarjuna Vishta Byaham Idam Krishnam ekam sena stito jagat. But what need is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. Thus, by his one planetary expansion, the Lord all-pervading Paramatma, the Lord maintains the complete material cosmic creation. He also maintains all manifestations in the spiritual world. Thus, by his one planetary expansion, the all-pervading Paramatma, the Lord maintains the complete material cosmic creation. He also maintains all manifestations in the spiritual world. Therefore, in this Shruti Mantra, the Shriyush Upanishads, the Lord is addressed as Pushan, the ultimate maintainer. The personality of Godhead Sri Krishna is always filled with transcendental bliss, anandamayo vyashat. When he was present at Vrindavan in India 5,000 years ago, he always remained in transcendental bliss, even from the beginning of his childhood pastimes. The killings of various demons such as Aga, Baka, Putana, Pralamba were but pleasure excursions for him. In his village of Vrindavan, he enjoyed himself with his mother, brother, and friends. And when he played the role of a naughty butter thief, all his associates enjoyed celestial bliss by his stealing. The Lord's fame as a butter thief is not reproachable, for by stealing butter, the Lord gave pleasure to his pure devotees. Everything the Lord did in Vrindavan was for the pleasure of his associates there. The Lord created these pastimes to attract the dry speculators and the acrobats of the so-called Hatha Yoga system who wish to find the absolute truth. Of the childhood play between the Lord and his playmates, the cowherd boys, Sukadeva Goswami says in Bhagavatam 10:12-11, Itam satam brahma sukhanubhutya dasham gatanam paradaivatena mayashritanam naradarakena sukham vijahru kritapunya puja. The personality of Godhead, who is perceived as impersonal, blissful Brahman by the Gyanis, who is worshipped as the Supreme Lord by the devotees in the mood of servitorship, and who is considered an ordinary human being by the mundane people, played with the cowherd boys, who had attained their position after accumulating many pious activities. Thus, the Lord is always engaged in transcendental loving activities with his spiritual associates in the various relationships of shanta, neutrality, dasya, servitorship, sakya, friendship, vatsalya, parental affection, and madhurya, conjugal love. Since it is said that Lord Krishna never leaves Vrindavan Dham, one may ask how he manages the affairs of the creation. This is answered in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, verses 14 through 18. The Lord pervades the entire material creation by his planetary part known as Paramatma, or Supersoul. Although the Lord personally has nothing to do with material creation, maintenance, and destruction, he causes all these things to be done by his planetary expansion, the Paramatma. Every living entity is known as Atma, soul, and the principal Atma, who controls them all, is Paramatma, the Supersoul. This system of God realization is a great science. The materialistic Shankhya yogis can only analyze and meditate on the 24 factors of the material creation, for they have very little information of the Purusha, of the Lord. And the impersonal transcendentalists are simply bewildered by the glaring effulgence of the Brahma Jyoti. If one wants to see the absolute truth in full, one has to penetrate beyond the 24 material elements and the glaring effulgence as well. Sri Ishopanishads points toward this direction, praying for the removal of the Hranmaya Patra, the dazzling covering of the Lord. Unless this covering is removed, so one can perceive the real face of the personality of Godhead, factual realization of the absolute truth can never be achieved. The Paramatma feature of the personality of Godhead is one of the three plenary expansions, or Vishnu tattvas, collectively known as the Purusha avatars. So this may be a little confusing for some of you. Are you familiar with the Purusha avatars? We'll explain that just a little bit. It's just when God creates the material world, the spiritual world is always in a permanent state. There's no change there. There's spiritual planets and there's spiritual forms of God, and there's many devotees there, and they're all interacting with the Lord according to how they love the Lord in his different features. Although he's one person, he can expand himself into many forms. And so there's a spiritual world, and there's also every now and then there's a creation of the material world. So the Lord expands himself in three different forms called the Purusha avatars. Or first he expands himself as what's called Mahavishnu, and the universes come out of the pores of his skin. And then he enters into each universe and lies down again. The universe fills up with water, and he lies on that ocean, and then from his navel a lotus comes, and Lord Brahma is born out of that lotus. That's called Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, that Vishnu form, and then Brahma comes out of that lotus flower, and then he's the secondary creator of the universe. He creates all the forms. And then within every atom of every form, the Lord expands himself as the Paramatma within every atom. That energy that's within that atom, that's keeping that atom together and it's doing its thing, that's all due to the Paramatma. All effulgence, all light. Krishna explains this in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It describes how the Paramatma is the light in everything, in the fire, in the electricity. He's the source of digestion. He's maintaining the balance and the laws of the material energy. So that's his Paramatma feature, and that's called Shirodakshaya Vishnu. So you have the three Vishnu forms that are just dealing with material energy. And the rest of the forms of God are in the spiritual world, and they're not having to deal with the material energy. They're just eternally having fun and doing pastimes. So that's what this is referring to here. The Paramatma feature of the personality of Godhead is one of these three plenary expansions of the Vishnu tattva. So we have Mahavishnu, and then we have Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Shirodakshaya Vishnu is the Paramatma. And collectively they're known as the Purusha avatars. One of these Vishnu tattvas, who is within the universe, is known as Shirodakshaya Vishnu. He is the Vishnu among the three principal deities, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And he is the all-pervading Paramatma in each and every individual entity. So within the material creation, we have three principal deities. We have Brahma, the creator, and Vishnu, the maintainer, which is the Paramatma, the Shirodakshaya Vishnu. And then we have the destroyer. And who is that?
Shiva.
Lord Shiva. So these are all manifestations of, they're called guna avatars. They're directly empowered by the Lord to do a particular function. Brahma's empowered to design and create, Vishnu maintains, and Lord Shiva destroys. And so we see in the material creation, from the most insignificant form to the most gigantic form, everything has a beginning and an end. And although energy can never be created or destroyed, the material energy, the forms, are always changing, even though the energy is eternal. And continuing on here, the second Vishnu tattva within the universe is Garbhodakshay Vishnu, the collective supersoul of all living entities. Beyond these two is Karunadakshay Vishnu, who lies on the causal ocean. So this is the first Vishnu, the Mahavishnu, who lies down on the causal ocean and begins to create the material world. He is the creator of all universes. The yoga system teaches the serious student to meet the Vishnu tattvas after going beyond the 24 material elements of the cosmic creation. The culture of empiric philosophy helps one realize the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, which is the glaring effulgence of the transcendental body of Sri Krishna. That the Brahma Jyoti is Krishna's effulgence is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita in 14:27, as well as in the Brahma Samhita 5:40. So Prabhupada already quoted 14:27 in the beginning of the purport. Now he's quoting from Brahma Samhita 5:40. Yasya prabha prabhavato jagaranda koti koti sasesha vasudadi vibhuti vinam tad brahma nishkalam anantam asesha bhutam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. In the millions and millions of universes, there are innumerable planets, and each and every one of them is different from the others by its cosmic constitution. All these planets are situated in the corner of the Brahma Jyoti. This Brahma Jyoti is but the personal rays of the personality of Godhead, Govinda, whom I worship. So that's the description of that mantra, which is also describing the material creation, how the material creation is just a small little aspect of the creation of God. The major aspect is the spiritual world. But in one corner of that spiritual world, Karunadakshay Vishnu lays down on the causal ocean. The material universes come out of his pores as little seeds. Then he enters into those seeds as Garbhodakshay Vishnu, and then he develops each universe. And by the agency of Brahma, and then he expands himself into every atom, and then the material creation goes on. But it's going on in just one little corner of the spiritual world, according to this verse of the Brahma Samhita. This mantra from the Brahma Samhita is spoken from the platform of factual realization of the Absolute Truth, and the Shruti mantra of Ishopanishad, under discussion, confirms this mantra as a process of realization. So Prabhupada is saying here, the Brahma Samhita is Brahma's personal realization. When we read the Brahma Samhita, what is being described is his satori. His real, in Japanese, realization is called satori. So in an instant, Brahma became self-realized. You know, that he actually meditated for millions of years, and he was in darkness. But then, you know, he received his mantra, the Gopal Gayatri, and he chanted that Gayatri, and then he heard the sound of Krishna's flute. And as soon as he heard the sound of Krishna's flute, then suddenly he had full realization of the spiritual world. And then he began to describe what he's seen. So the Brahma Samhita is Brahma's personal account of his realization. But Prabhupada's mentioning here that this account given by Brahma is also substantiated in the Shruti mantras, or the original Vedic teachings, of which Sri Upanishads is a part of that. The Upanishads are called Shruti, or that first Vedic teaching that emanated from the Lord himself. And then from that, then the Vedas expand. So the Upanishads, and this verse is also corroborating what Brahma's realizing. So Prabhupada's just substantiating that here. The Ishopanishad mantra is a simple prayer to the Lord to remove the Brahma Jyoti so that one can see his real face. This Brahma Jyoti effulgence is described in detail in several mantras of the Mundaka Upanishad. Boy, this is a, well. And here are all the mantras here. In the spiritual realm, beyond the material covering is the unlimited Brahman effulgence, which is free from material contamination. That effulgent white light is understood by transcendentalists to be the light of all lights. In that realm, there is no need of sunshine, moonshine, fire, or electricity, or illumination. Indeed, whatever illumination appears in the material world is only a reflection of that supreme illumination. That Brahman, in front and in back, in the north, south, east, and west, and also overhead and below. In other words, that supreme Brahman effulgence spreads throughout both the material and the spiritual skies. Perfect knowledge means knowing Krishna as the root of this Brahman effulgence. This knowledge can be gained by such scriptures as Srimad Bhagavatam, which perfectly elaborates the science of Krishna. In Srimad Bhagavatam, the author Srila Vyasadeva has established that one will describe the supreme truth as Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan according to one's realization of him. Srila Vyasadeva never states that the supreme truth is a jiva, an ordinary living entity. The living entity should never be considered the all-powerful supreme truth. If he were the supreme, he would not need to pray to the Lord to remove his dazzling cover, so that the living entity could see his real face. Excellent point. The conclusion is that one who has no knowledge of the potencies of the supreme truth will realize the impersonal Brahman. Similarly, when one realizes the material potencies of the Lord, but has little or no information of the spiritual potencies, he attains the Paramatma realization. Thus, both Brahman and Paramatma realizations of the Absolute Truth are partial realizations. However, when one realizes the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, in full potency after the removal of the Hiranmaya Patra, one realizes Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Lord Sri Krishna, who is known as Vasudeva, is everything, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. He is the Bhagavan, the root. The Brahman and Paramatma are his branches. In Bhagavad Gita, 6:46 and 47, there is the comparative analysis of these three types of transcendentalists: the worshippers of impersonal Brahman, Gyanis, the worshippers of the Paramatma feature, the Yogis, and the devotees of Lord Sri Krishna, the Bhaktas. It is stated there that the Gyanis, those who have cultivated Vedic knowledge, are better than ordinary fruitive workers. That the yogis are still greater than the gyanis, and that among all yogis, those who constantly serve the Lord with all their energies are the topmost. In summary, a philosopher is better than a laboring man. A mystic is superior to a philosopher. And of all the mystic yogis, he who follows bhakti yoga, constantly engaging in the service of the Lord, is the highest. Sri Yusha Upanishad directs us towards this perfection. Would you like to read that verse? In the Bhagavad Gita, 6th chapter, 46-47.
Yodiko yogi yani yogi matodikaha karni kashchadiko yogi tasma yogi pavarjuna. A yogi is greater than the ascetic, greater than the empiricist, and greater than the fruitive worker. Therefore, O Arjuna, in all circumstances, be a yogi. Yoginam apisaresham bhakta panantaratmana shabhavan pajate yomam. Same yukta tamo mataha. And of all yogis, the one with great faith, who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me, he is the most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all. That is my opinion.
Thank you. Any comment on?
Just interesting. The only comment I have is when I looked up this verse, and I just read it this morning because we did this chapter this morning, and I've read it many times. It's 46 especially, but I never really thought about it as a verse that's talking about the various kinds of people with realizations and how the yogi's the best. And also, just when I glanced at the verses, I saw that the last verse brings everything home from that chapter, which is all about Dhyan Yoga, in which the word bhajate is used in the last verse, yoginam apisarisham madgatanantaratmanam. Bhajate yomam, he says, and in the purport Prabhupada explains just how the root of that bhaj means there's a need of service, and it indicates a bhakti, not that there's a mechanical type of yoga which is supreme, but actually ultimately what's supreme in the culmination of this chapter is that one should engage in loving service with, and be a shradhavan, or one should be full of faith in that process, and that's the ultimate. So I was just appreciating how, you know, picking out verses and going back in and looking more carefully, each one is, it can be mined unlimitedly, and every time I look at a verse, there's more comes out of it from different angles of seeing. It's not that they're static, but actually they continue to give, just like a accommodating cow can give you everything if you milk it.
Thank you. Any other comments on the Ishopanish verse or questions?
Just this comment that was made about budget. About bhajate having reference to devotional service, doesn't that to a certain degree imply that I wouldn't say that it is Prabhupada's conclusions, but the conclusions in this Bhagavad Gita where everything is ultimately converging on devotional service. It's like even when they talk about karma yoga, it's in some respects then connected to devotional service. They talk about dhyana yoga, and also it becomes connected to devotional service. Isn't that the case with also the interpretation of this 6th chapter, that even though the chapter is about meditation, that meditation is as such connected to devotional service?
Well, absolutely right. I mean, you practically every chapter, especially at the end, Krishna will tie it into devotional service. And so he mentions, you know, the karmis, even the empiricists are, you know, before there were the Shankya yogis who analyzed the material world, and basically what they're analyzing, they're making a distinction between what is changing and what is not changing. Just like Krishna says in the 2nd chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, nasato vidite bhavo, na bhavo vidite sata, ubayurapi drishton tas toyanos tad vidarshibi. Those who are seers of the truth have concluded that of the of the non-existence, there is of the existence, there is no change. That which really exists has no change, and that which is changing ultimately has no existence, no real substance. So that's a process of observation. You know, it's sort of like the material scientists today. They observe in minute detail all aspects of, according to their capacity. They are analyzing material nature and observing and recording and experimenting, and this way they're accumulating knowledge. And so the yogis also, there's this kind of class of yogi, the empiricists, who Krishna is alluding to, that they also observe, they make distinction between what is temporary and what is eternal. Consciousness is not changing, it's eternal. And the mind is always changing, the body is always changing. And by observation, one is able to at least come to a Brahman realization that I am Brahman, my consciousness is eternal, and it's all the same as everybody else's consciousness. But that's as far as you get.
I am Brahman means what, Brahma?
I am
spirit.
I am spirit. You know, I am light. I am eternal. I'm Sat Chit Ananda. I exist. I know that I exist, and I'm blissful. And that's the qualities of Brahman. And we all have that. And we can all come to that understanding just by a little introspection, by a little using our intellect to distinguish between matter and spirit. With a little inner contemplation, one can come to that experience. But in the seventh chapter, Krishna says, Bahunam Jamanam Ante Genevamam Prabhajante Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatmasudurlabaha. After many, many births of such practice, one will come to the realization that Vasudeva is the source of everything. That although we are Brahman, there's a source to our nature. And once that source is realized, then devotion can begin. As long as one is just thinking it's all one, then there's no one to worship. If there's no distinction between me and God, then there's no worship to go on. But once one sees it, well, I'm eternal, but you know, my life, my existence is depending on a higher source. Then that begins to invoke our devotion. So.
All right. So the yogi ultimately has to come to that step. When he's a yogi, he's not there. Yeah. Because in other parts of the Bhagavad Gita, you know, distinctions are made that one who has come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform has realized Brahman, Brahma-Jyoti, and one who is doing mystic yoga, dhyana yoga, can realize Paramatma through meditation. But it is pointed out that these are only partial realizations, and the ultimate realization, the realization of the Supreme Personality through Bhakti Yoga, means these distinctions are made there. Mystic Yoga or Dhyana Yoga ultimately can lead to Bhakti Yoga being one of the rungs of a ladder, and you're climbing so you get to the top. But in itself, when it is practice, isn't it true that it is focused on Paramatma realization, if you will, and is not yet the stage of maturity of Bhakti Yoga?
Yeah, it's not. It's not clear at that point. Even the mystic yoga sometimes cannot make the distinction between himself and the Paramatma. So really, in order to enter into Bhakti Yoga, one has to be blessed by Bhakti. One has to have the association of a devotee and be trained in that. One has to receive this knowledge. You know, that's also part of bhakti, is receiving the teaching from the Lord and what he says about himself, learning about the relationship. That's the beginning of bhakti yoga or sambandha jnana. So, but once one, and Prabhupada often says that one may be Brahman realized or Paramatma realized, and if he has the opportunity to associate with a devotee, then he can immediately, you know, take to the process and come to the highest stage very quickly from that. You have some?
We were reading recently the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to Sanatana Goswami, and there's an exhaustive explanation by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatana about how each and every process, whatever rung on the ladder it is, that the reason that that particular process is successful at all is to the degree that it contains some bhakti. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's an explanation of Kardama Muni and how he meditated for 10,000 years before the Lord appeared before him and arranged, actually, so that Swayambhuva Manu would come and offer his daughter in marriage and so on. Because after 10,000 years of meditation, when Vishnu came, he offered a benediction and he said, please give me a good wife. So he arranged for Swayambhuva Manu's daughter to come. Srila Prabhupada explains that although he was engaged in the process of mystic yoga meditation, and the chapter itself in the Bhagavatam explains that because of the mixture of bhakti yoga, that's what made it successful. So there are quite a few substantiating verses from various parts of Shastra, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives, and which Jiva Goswami then elaborates on through many volumes in his book called Bhakti Sandarbha, which is an entire exposition about how bhakti is the supreme process and how every process is dependent on bhakti in order to come to the next higher stage. So, it's, in summary, again, and to repeat, every process along the way has or requires some tinge of bhakti for one's success in that process. In and of themselves, if they're isolated from bhakti, what does it mean? It means that there's no understanding or connection at all to the Supreme Absolute Truth and our relationship with Him. And in that case, if I'm thinking I'm the Supreme and I'm worshipping myself, there's no bhakti. And in fact, it's considered an offense. If one wants to merge into Paramatma and become Paramatma, this is considered to be an offense, actually. It's an aparadha. Radha means service. Aparadha means the opposite of service. And because our constitutional position is as servants, that checks our progress from whatever position we're at.